I think gamblers require that not egregious errors be made in their games. And I'm not just saying that because Cousin Sal and I each lost $30,000 on this game.
His name is Clay Travis. Welcome into our Saturday podcast. He has outkicked the coverage. He's on iHeartRadio. He's on Lock It In. Twitter and Periscope. He's got a new book, Republicans Buy Sneakers 2, How the Left is Ruining Sports with Politics, and his Twitter is at Clay Travis. Polarizing, yes, smart, absolutely. All right, I'm going to tee you up on a bunch of stuff here. Number one, we can all have our theories on this. I want to hear yours. NCAA tournament ratings are up massively. Second highest ratings in like 29 years. Now, we know the quality, Clay, has been punctured by the one and done. There's fewer NBA players, and the ones that are in the sport are young, and they exit the minute they can. What do you subscribe to on why the ratings this year have exploded?
Three theories. One, the games matter a great deal. If you are like me and you sit around and you watch sports every night, the NBA can make you throw your hands up in the air and just say, why bother? When you see the Golden State Warriors get run at home by the Phoenix Suns, it's hard to believe that the regular season matters right in the NBA. When people are taking games off for load management, I watch Jazz, Lakers, LeBron's not playing, it's on ESPN. So I think people love basketball, but they crave competitive excellence.
This, I think, is a real theory. Now, what about the Zion factor, which is not since maybe Patrick Ewing, we've had this fascinating a prospect?
I think Zion is two, and I think sports gambling is three. And let me go to Zion. I think you're right. Look, I think Zion is a transcendent, almost Leviathan striding across the entire sports landscape. And I think he was really smart in the way that he used social media to make himself sort of an underground star. You saw these videos from small gyms of these spectacular feats of athletic immortality almost from a high school level. And everybody wondered how he was going to translate at the college level. I think even something like his shoe blowing out makes him seem otherworldly.
Yeah.
And so I think there are a lot of people who I always say, you know, like needle movers, right? Like, who will make me change my behavior? You may not think that it makes sense, but when I heard Johnny Manziel was in playing football on the AAF on the NFL Network last weekend, I flipped it over to the NFL Network, right? When Zion is in a game, I think it's hard to take your eyes away from him.
He's a captivating talent. Yeah, he's magnetic.
Yep. And then the third one, Colin, and I think this is becoming bigger and bigger, and obviously I'm kind of immersed in this world. I think sports gambling. I think the NCAA tournament was already a major event, and I think sports gambling, what do you want when you gamble on sports? You want to know that the guys you are gambling on and the coaches are trying their absolute hardest to win.
Yeah.
And I think football, you get that feeling, right? In the NFL and college football, it's hard to fake football. I think people are desperate for a sport where people are going all in, and I think the college basketball is it. And here's a fourth factor for you that I think you'll appreciate too. I think in this age where there are so many options, what becomes more valuable is the thing that you already know you love. And I use this analogy to explain it. You have kids. I've got kids. When they're young and you take them out to a restaurant, every kid's menu in America looks the exact same, right? It's got your grilled cheese, your hamburger, your chicken tenders, your pizza. It's always cheese pizza. That's always on the menu. When you know, when I can put on Netflix and I'm not sure if I'm going to like it, Hulu, Amazon Prime, even all the networks right now, if you know that you like sports, you know the NCAA tournament is going to matter. And I think the biggest events matter more, even in an era when there is so much to talk about and so much to watch, because I think we still crave that communal connection with everybody else. And so I think the biggest events, even in a world where there's so many options, become bigger, whether it's Game of Thrones, whether it's the NFL, whether it's the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I'd synthesize those. I think the words urgency. I think the NFL and March Madness give you urgency. One loss, you're out. I think in a world now where there's so many options, you really only a handful of things get you in. It's either a transcendent star,
yep,
or this game matters a lot. I think that hurts college basketball's regular season but benefits March Madness. I think it kills baseball. I think it hurts the NBA's regular season. I think only two things only get me to a TV now. A great individual player I love, or urgency. And I think March Madness in the NFL and college football, although it's getting very regional over the last 4 or 5 years, I think those three sports to me move me more than any others. Let's go to gambling is funny in sports because we're both very pro-gambling. In fact, you'd be proud of me. I can't announce either of these publicly, but I'm in two projects that I finalized this week that have a sports gambling connection.
Yes.
Both are businesses. One's more retail and one's really techie. I think one you know about.
Yeah.
I believe it's a game changer. I think networks are going to make major announcements. One of them I know for sure in the next year. Is there a downside to it? Is there any part of it you don't like? I do think I'm seeing some initial social media reactions. I think there's a degenerate quality that worries me. But other than that, I don't see a negative to it.
I think the only negative becomes if there is match fixing that goes on, right? And if you can directly tie it to gambling. Now, the people who are better experts at this than me say the best way to ensure that a sport is always on the up and up is to have open and transparent and legal gambling, because the sunshine will illuminate any sort of misbehavior in a way that if it's a shadowy back world universe, it's easier to hide. So I think that's probably the negative that is out there. And look, I think maybe a negative is if people start to think, oh, I'm going to do this for a living, right? Like, there's a very tiny small percentage of people who make money enough to be professional gamblers. I think the way you need to think about this is the way I think about it all the time. I am a dad of three young kids. If I can gamble on a game when I'm sitting at home and my family's home and they're in bed and I can kick back and put my feet up and care more about the game that's on my television because I've got a little bit extra riding on it, I think that's the key. And I think the key is not betting. And this is true for no matter what, whether you go to Vegas and sit down to play blackjack or the slots or whatever else, knowing what you can afford to lose and staying within your limits. The older I get, Colin, moderation is the key to life in almost all respects, right? Like, and some people I know have personalities that don't allow that to occur, but I don't know that you can protect all of society because some people have a compulsion.
I think you and I have two big similarities. I'll talk about the first. We love business. I read the business and the sports page, often business first. I am often struck by the lack of emotional discipline within the media. I told a friend of mine, Tim Kuhn, recently, I wrote two books with him, that I would have outlawed a year ago, and I told him this months ago, I would have outlawed the word bombshell with Donald Trump, the Russia report, and the report. I said, because if you whiff, it will have irreparable damage to political media. Well, this week, the report comes out, the Mueller report comes out, and it was an absolute whiff by the left. And I think it's done real damage. And I feel the same way with Colin Kaepernick, where he got paid about $4 million a year, not 80. But I find the business savvy and discipline of the sports media and political media is awful. The knowledge of what they do is good. But people were rooting for Kaepernick to get paid. People were rooting for Trump to be leveled. And in both cases, I think you lose long-term big chunks of your consumer base audience who no longer trust you. Let's start with the Kaepernick report, which I trust the Wall Street Journal more than random bloggers. What did you make of that?
First of all, you're right. We both love business. And I would say what connects both of these stories, and I think this is a big issue in larger media today, is we have lost the ability to distinguish between opinionists and people who are supposed to be providing non-biased journalistic coverage. And I think that's because they've all gotten mixed together. I think you and I would both say, hey, we're in the opinion business.
Oh, yeah.
I think people who listen to us don't mistake that. Doesn't mean we can't sometimes say things that we believe is going to be newsworthy. But if you put me in one side or the other, like, are you news or are you opinion? I'm clearly opinion. And so I think both of these stories, what has happened is it's become very difficult to figure out who is on the news side and who's on the opinion side. And I think that's a big loss for overall information and fact-based journalism
and by the
in
way,
this country.
Social media and Twitter
created that. Yes.
The people that I thought were reporters, now they're constantly showing their hand politically.
Yes.
And so I don't trust them. And by the way, I'm not a Trump fan.
Yeah.
I voted for Obama twice. I would have voted for Bloomberg. I'm really on the fence. I'm probably down to you know, Biden is somebody I would trust a little more, but I'm not a Trump guy. But you don't have to, as a reporter, constantly tell me how much you resent and hate the person you're covering.
I think also, and this is a good lesson, sometimes if you hate something, you are in danger of becoming it, right? And I think what has happened to a large degree is there is a great deal of animus provoked by Donald Trump. He is the perfect social media president because there's very few people who are like, I'm gonna like him a little bit. I don't like him very much. Like, he's either the greatest thing if you're a Trump person or the worst thing if you're an anti-Trump person. And so I think what has happened is when the coverage goes out, right, I think that there's been very little bias check. And look, I don't mean bias in the sense of racism or sexism or anything else. I just mean, I think about this all the time from a lawyer perspective, right? So I was trained to look at all the evidence, all the facts, and then defend one side or the other. But as the way you are trained, you have to constantly be thinking about what the other side is going to say, which allows you to make the most reasonable possible opinion to appeal to a jury or to appeal to a judge. And in my opinions, before I go public, people might think I'm polarizing, like you said, or sometimes my opinions are out there. Before I go public with an opinion, in my head and oftentimes in writing it out, I will have worked through the entire argument. So people think I'm just shooting off at the mouth. You may not agree with me, but there's a logic behind all of my opinions, and I think about them almost like I'm a judge. Like, I want there to be a coherence to my opinion, regardless of what your politics are or what my politics are. I'll give you an example. Brett Kavanaugh. I said, I don't care what the guy did in high school, and I don't think based on one person's allegation, you can force him to not become a Supreme Court justice. That logic also applies for a Democrat lieutenant governor in right now Virginia, who's got two sexual assault charges against him and is still the lieutenant governor of Virginia, but there's no other corroborating evidence of someone who knew about these incidents. And so I'm saying, like, we can't just allow allegations to immediately eliminate people from being able to be as elected officials, right? And I try to be consistent with that. And what I find over and over again is sports, which is inherently fanatical, right? When I started off on radio, I used to talk to SEC fans every day.
Right.
And there's always a scandal in the SEC, right? And what I would say on the radio all the time is, before you get your pitchforks, if you're an Alabama fan, I want you to pretend that that instead of what has been alleged against Auburn, it was alleged against Alabama. If you're an Ohio State fan, I want you to pretend it vice versa. And would your response be the exact same? And if your answer is no, if you logically can put yourself in those shoes and pretend that it's occurring somewhere else, that's a sign of your bias. One of my favorite bias stories, Colin, is when remember when JT Barrett got a DUI in Columbus?
Yeah.
There was a letter to the editor in the Columbus Dispatch saying, this is evidence that we have far too many DUI stops in Columbus. From an Ohio State fan. Right? Defending the quarterback. Do you think if Michigan's quarterback had gotten pulled over for a DUI, that guy would have written a letter to the editor to the Ann Arbor Daily News or whatever it's called saying, you know what? There's way too many DUI traffic stops going on right now in Michigan and in Ann Arbor around the University of Michigan. Of course not. That's a clear sign of bias. And so I think it's a good test for fans. Every time you respond to a story, pretend it was involving the person that you love the most or you hate the most. Your response should try and be the same.
More with Clay Travis in a minute, but first, when men and women upgrade from their tattered, outdated multi-pack underwear to Tommy John, the most comfortable on the planet, they have a lot to say about it. Like Scott, who's happy his double agents are no longer going rogue. Or Melissa, whose Tommy Johns are so light and comfortable, she worries she'll forget to pull them down when she goes to the bathroom. Point is, men and women across America are crazy about Tommy John. Over 6 million pairs sold. No wedgie guarantee. Stay put waistbands. A range of fabrics. For ladies, the new Air collection is made from quick drying, seamless bonded edges that offer no visible panty line. Tommy John is absolutely certain you'll love it. They have the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. Go to TommyJohn.com/Herd. That'll get you 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/HERD. TommyJohn.com/HERD. Clay Travis, Outkick the Coverage, Lock It In, at Clay Travis, new book, Republicans Buy Sneakers 2, How the Left is Ruining Sports with Politics. NBA players play for 18 years. NFL guys, the stars often play 8 to 12, Gronk 9. Baseball guys sign 13-year contracts. Clint Dempsey played soccer for 20 years. Federer, Serena, Djokovic, forever. Mickelson got good in the early 90s. He's still playing. Conor McGregor, a shooting star for 2.5 years, and now potentially retires. UFC is the hole in their business. Nobody, Brock, Holly Holm, Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey, their stars don't last long enough.
I think it's a massive hole in their business. And I think the other problem with their business is, unlike the WWE and unlike boxing to a certain extent, and certainly the WWE, which is why I think Fox was so smart to get into it, they can create their stars and build the storylines to ensure that those stars last forever. You didn't mention The Rock. You didn't mention, Triple H. I mean, the WWE, when they create a star, will become a star forever. And I think you just hit on it. I mean, Conor McGregor is 30 or 31 years old,
three
and he
great
may be
fights,
done.
Three mega fights, Nate Diaz 2, Mayweather, and then Habib, and it's over. And I mean, he had other fights, but those were the three where he became an American household name. I mean, if Tom Brady played three big games and it was over, you'd be like, yeah, it's great. But as a business, to me, it's a huge issue with UFC. Their stars just don't last long enough.
Yeah, and I think they caught meteor strike streaking across the night sky with Ronda Rousey, who's going to be the lead at WrestleMania. And the problem with Rousey was she got beat up by Holly Holm. And then if this was WWE, she would have come back and beaten her next fight, right? Beaten Holly Holm the next time, or whoever she fought. I think I can't even remember who it was now. She lost that one and her career was over, right? And so I think the big challenge is it's hard to create stars in the UFC because they're going out and getting their brains beat in, and it's hard to stay on top for very long. And that means that it's hard for me to care. You mentioned all those other sports, superstars that last for a long time. I said there's two things we like in sports. We like the new mixed with the familiar. It's the same thing in movies, right? I'm going to take all my kids to go see Avengers. The reason all these Marvel movies work is because they're providing the new mixed with the familiar. That's what works in sports. All the time. It's what works in movies. You get somebody in on a storyline, but we're going to give you something new. It's a sequel. It's a new season, but you're familiar with the people involved. That's why LeBron works in the NBA. That's why I think the NBA is in trouble after LeBron. It's why Tom Brady works. Why Peyton Manning worked. New plus familiar always works, and you don't get the familiar very often in the UFC, which is why I'm not bullish on the long-term future of the league.
I'm surprised you like the NFL changing the pass interference rule, because it feels very reactionary to me.
Yeah,
we now have stories where the Saints would have lost to the Steelers had the rule been in place, and they would not have had a number one seed. They'd have been a two seed playing in Los Angeles. I am not a fan. Nick Wright actually said this. If you were driving down the freeway and a boulder fell over an overpass and hit your car and windshield, you would not now create as an industry boulder insurance. There are rare occurrences, like a completely butchered call in football. I don't like overreacting. I would table it for a year. Watch this year pass interference. I think they're rushing it to market. But you like the PI rule being changed.
Yeah, I love it. And I think also this is a benefit, I think, of the growing impact of sports gambling, because I think gamblers require that not egregious errors be made in their games. And I'm not just saying that because Cousin Sal and I each lost $30,000 on this game. I think that anytime you can go and make a change to a sport that makes its result more reliable, more predictable, more efficient, and better, you should make that change. And I think a lot of times the NFL gets caught in old, past period. Look, you could say the same thing about instant replay in general. I remember having buddies when instant replay started in college football, and suddenly a call would get turned over and it would not favor their team. And they would say, see, this is why we should have never gone to instant replay in the first point, because we would have had a touchdown on that play otherwise. I think it's the right call. I think it also is going to be implemented in a smart way because it's going into the existing NFL product. And as a result, I don't think you're going to get a lot of crazy challenges. Like, a coach needs to save his challenges. So if he thinks there's a pass interference on a 5-yard penalty, a 5-yard play, he's probably not going to throw his flag. The only area I'm a little bit nervous in is the Hail Mary at the end of the game, right? When the booth review occurs, everybody who has ever watched the NFL knows that there typically is pass interference both ways when the ball is thrown into the end zone on a Hail Mary. And so I think going back and reviewing those, given the draconian nature of the penalty, if, for instance, somebody got knocked down in the end zone and on a Hail Mary, which is a low percentage play, you threw a flag, you'd have a first and goal at the 2, I think it is, and you'd gain like 50 yards, and that could change the outcome in a big way. So I would almost prefer that this not apply for Hail Mary type situations and those still be refereed the same way, because basically the refs swallow the flag. I don't remember the last time, you may remember one, when a flag was thrown on a Hail Mary in the NFL.
No, it
doesn't happen.
Yeah, and I always argue this, Clay, that you don't officiate the same way late in games than early. And a great example is we have rule changes for overtime that don't look like regulation. We have a 2-minute warning late in games. In the NBA, if you call a timeout, they'll move the ball under, like 2 minutes. They'll move it to the other end of the floor. So officials don't officiate the same way late in games. They swallow whistles. The times we are infuriated with officiating late in games, it's never the call they make. It's the call they don't. Boxing referees don't want to end fights with 45 seconds left. They're going to let guys blister each other. And if you went back to the Rams-Saints game, what really struck me in the second half is how aggressive the Rams corners were the entire second half. Because the bottom line is, the bigger the game, I think it's a human quality. Officials don't want to be in the newspaper the next day.
Yeah, I think you're right. And also, the thing I would hit there is I'm still furious at Sean Payton for throwing the ball on first down after that big completion.
He's the luckiest guy in the world.
Yes.
Nobody talked about that. It was an egregious coaching move.
Yes, it was stupid. And there was no benefit to it. And that was infuriating to me in real time. This is not Monday morning quarterbacking. But I think, we tend to look at whatever the most glittery object is in an end-of-game scenario. But that one was just so egregious. I think I do think it'll improve the game to have the adjustment.
Finally, Tony Romo, word out, wants $10 million. I've never felt an NFL analyst as good as Collinsworth is, or Troy Aikman, or Tony Romo. I'm going to watch football regardless. Now, you don't want a disaster. Monday Night Football's booth was a disaster. I don't think any TV analyst has the leverage of, say, Rachel Maddow, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, an opinionist. Like, I will not watch an opinion show if the opinionist takes the day off. I think Troy Aikman's great, but if the Eagles are playing the Cowboys, I'm watching it regardless, although I do think they can add a veneer of excellence. I don't know to do it. I like Romo, but the idea that he's going to come in a year later, be the highest paid guy by a mile, I don't know if I was CBS if I'd make that move.
It's an interesting question. I'd make it. Let me tell you why. First of all, John Madden got $8 million in 1993 when he went to Fox, right? When Fox added the NFC. Yeah. $8 million in 1993 is around $13 or $14 million in today's day. So that kind of puts into perspective how much more Madden was making than even the best in current environment.
Yeah.
And what did Madden immediately give Fox? The imprimatur of legitimacy for a brand new league.
Yeah.
I think desperately ESPN needs to make up for what happened in their Monday Night Football booth ever since John Gruden left. And so it's not just that CBS would not have Romo, it's that one of their competitors would have Romo. And you know as well as I do that in this business world, oftentimes you get paid not only for the value that you bring to the place that you are, but to the value you keep someone else from being able to unlock from having you. So that's why I think CBS has to pay Romo $10 million. The other thing is, Romo is in a great spot. He's a lot like us, I think, in that he loves business. He loves being involved in the larger universe. And I don't think he needs the money. I think he just thinks that's where the market is, and so he should be paid what the market is. But I think Romo at 38 years old could walk away and never call another NFL game and still be worth several hundred million dollars. It's a pretty good place to be in, so I think CBS has to pay him.
More with Clay Travis after this. Alarm! The willies! Heebie-jeebies! Panic! There are dozens of words for fear, but just one for an exceptional home security company to stop fear at your front door. SimpliSafe. It's the home security that makes me fear less. Award-winning 24/7 protection protects your home through it all. Blizzards, blackouts, burglars. They've won awards from all the tech experts that count. The Verge calls it the best home security. It's won Reader's Choice from PC Mag. It's a two-time winner of CNET's Editor's Choice. And a Wirecutter top pick. SimpliSafe, no contract, no hidden fees, no gotchas. Keep the prices fair and honest. Thanks to SimpliSafe, fear now has no place in a place like home. Try it. Free shipping and free returns, too. Plus, a 60-day risk-free trial, too. Order now. SimpliSafe.com/herd. Be sure to go there. They know who sent you. We did. SimpliSafe.com/HERD.
You know, it's funny. When I was at ESPN, I used to tell people, I'm like, Gruden's just great TV.
Yeah.
He just jumps off the television. And it was remarkable to me. The TV critics never got him. It is so remarkable to me that you could be a critic of something, a food critic, a theater critic, and not get great. Gruden's great TV. I mean, it's amazing. Like, if you're a food critic, everybody knows Gordon Ramsay's good, or the late Anthony Bourdain. If you're a theater critic, everybody knows, you know, Hamilton is great.
Yes.
TV critics can't figure out basic, obvious stuff that Barkley's great on TV. Gruden was great TV. And if you don't think so, look at the Grand Canyon hole he left. I mean, they had a crane. They had a guy in the booth, out of a booth. How hard you are to replace is how great you are. Not just your talent, but will you be hard to replace? Gruden, there's still a hole on their draft. They don't have the quarterback camp. Monday Night Football. Gruden, for all you want to say, he was the highest paid ESPN employee, and there was a little pushback when I was there, and I was always like, everything he's on is great. Draft, games, quarterback camp. He's a tremendous. I don't know if he's a great coach anymore. I thought he was great TV.
Yeah, the good point on Romo would be that he's going to do around 19 games for them.
Yeah.
CBS is going to pay $1 billion for the NFL. What is it worth $500,000 per game to increase the overall quality of your game if you think Romo's that good? I think the answer is yes. Now, the response would be, Gottlieb would say, well, I don't think he increases the overall number of people who watch a game. I'm not sure. I don't know about you, but like tonight, there's a good chance when throughout the NCAA tournament, we talked about the ratings. And when I'm watching a game, if there is a game that the announcers annoy me on, I put it on mute and I'll watch it in silence. I never do that with a Tony Romo game. I never did it with a Gruden game. I never did it with a Kirk Herbstreit game. There are a lot of guys out there that I think are really good. There's also a lot of people in our business who are really bad. And so, sometimes I'd rather just watch the still images on my, the images moving on my screen, because I know what's going on. I've watched enough games. To me, Romo makes me enjoy the game more, and that's rare. I'd pay him.
Well, there's also, is an NFL analyst worth $10 million because they don't drive me to games? Your point's a good one, which is, if you go and you and your wife are getting married, right? You'll pay a little more for the venue. It won't make your marriage better. It won't necessarily make your sex better that night or the pictures better, right?
Or even the number of people who come to your wedding,
right?
It
won't change it.
Probably not.
But it will increase the quality of the night if the venue's nicer, it's got a better view overlooking water, it's cleaner. It won't mean your night will be hotter.
Yes.
But it will. So Troy Aikman ensures that our broadcast is just excellent with Buck.
It also eliminates disaster.
Yes, yes.
And right? Monday Night Football was a disaster. So if you're an executive and you're like, hey, I got Jim Nance and Tony Romo, that's something you can take off your table and never have to worry about for 5 to 10 years, depending on how long you sign those guys to work together, right? I think in this day and age, when you have so many things on your plate, and I'm sure I know this happened when Fox came and got you and Skip. They're like, okay, we're going to get Colin Cowherd and we're going to get Skip Bayless. We think they're the two best at what they do, And our concern about those 6 hours of programming, we can take off the table. Like, we are going to maximize through those two guys what is possible for the 6 hours that they're on television on FS1. Doesn't mean that it's going to be immediately like a billion people are going to watch, but the largest possible audiences, and then I can go focus on these other things where I feel like my talents can be better utilized. If I'm CBS, the last thing I want to do is lose Romo, and then I got to find a new guy to put in there with Jim Nantz, and then I got to watch everybody gloating at ESPN or Fox, whoever hires him away, about how much better the new broadcast is with Romo and the other guy than whoever you put him in there with Jim Nantz. So I think Romo's in an incredible negotiating position here. He doesn't need the money. CBS has to pay it to him. I think he's a no-brainer.
Clay Travis, good talking to you, bud.
Always enjoy it. Appreciate the time, my man.